We try again. Oh, there we go. Thanks, Heis. Thanks, Mark. How's it going? Mano, that was incredible. Thank you very much. All those tricky names. Morel, you got off the hook. That was well done. To this point in time in the book of Acts, Satan's attacks had been on the church in many different ways. He'd attempted many forms of direct opposition and intimidation. Sounds like the mafia, doesn't it? And he tried to corrupt the church from within. These strategies were unsuccessful in stopping or slowing the work of the church. Now Satan hoped to divide and conquer by raising up one group of people against another group of people. So let me introduce, in the red corner, does anybody have a bell to ring? In the red corner, we have the Hebrews. Now the Hebrews were those Jews who were more inclined to embrace Jewish culture and mostly from Judea. Okay, so that's our red. With Greek culture, and the Hellenists regarded the Hebrews as holier than thou traditionalists. There was already an existing suspicion between the two groups, and Satan tried to take advantage of that long-standing suspicion. It's important to remember that though the titles like Hebrews and Hellenists are used, these are actually Christians. Both groups are Christians, followers of Jesus. They were all from Jewish background, and they had all embraced Jesus as their Savior. But the church taking on that responsibility was probably because there was a gap in the existing structure. So the church stepped in. The church stepped in and took care of vulnerable widows. And those widows could represent a whole range of different people within that group. Think of the most vulnerable in our culture. And that's where the church stepped in to help and support. And the early church took this responsibility seriously. And the widows, anyone in that group, heavily relied on the support of the church. They relied on the daily distribution of supplies. Apparently, some of the Christians from a Hellenistic background, so some of the Hellenists, believed that the widows within their group, within their way of thinking within that Christian group, were being overlooked, shortchanged, that the other group, their widows were being taken, given more. Had better supplies, got it earlier. You can imagine what that looks like. And so there's a little bit of a tiff going on. Now, hands up if you've been in church world for a while. Okay, have you ever seen a little tiff amongst believers? Just a little one. All believers of Jesus and a little tiff. All right. So theologian John Stott, who's quite well known, says it's not suggested that the oversight is deliberate. More probably, the cause was poor administration or supervision. So there's no intent here. And Satan loves to use an unintentional wrong to begin a conflict. The Hebrews were right in their hearts, and the Hellenists were right with their facts. These were perfect conditions for a church-splitting conflict. So how did the apostles, the 12, handle the situation? Well, firstly, they spoke to the general group of believers, to the multitude of the disciples, and pursued the solution with a lot of communication, listening, and input from among the people. They even asked those, probably especially those who felt wrong, to make suggestions and to put it, to set aside, the decision was made to set aside men of good character, people of good character, to solve the problem. The leaders listened to the problem and worked together to solve it. You know what they didn't do in this passage? They didn't throw the complainers out. That would have been really easy. Yeah, shut the voice down, throw them out. That would have been easy. They didn't decide to divide into two groups. They didn't have a church split. They didn't shun or persecute the unhappy people. And they didn't form a committee and discuss the problem to death. No doubt someone suggested that the apostles themselves just personally fix the problem and attend to the distribution to the widows. Good thing they didn't listen to that. This issue with the widows probably didn't concern the actual serving of food. They didn't stand in the serving line and distribute the food. That wasn't the issue. It speaks of the handling of the administration, of the financial and practical details around caring for the widows. A table in that time, if you can think about it, was like the exchange of money table, the accounting table. David, can you picture that? That accounting table. The deacons who were elected were looked to oversee the distribution of money and resources and provisions to the needy among them. If you can think in your mind, a bit like Centrelink. So they set aside Centrelink. The qualifications described by the apostles here focused on the character of those to be chosen. Not the tallest person, not the shortest person, the person who'd been there the longest, the one who could talk the leg off a chair. It was all about the internal characteristics of that person. I'd like to think of it as the fruit of the Spirit. That's kind of what they were looking for. We can't say that this was only a good decision because the people liked it, that it was favourable. In a little while, we're going to have a state election. And it's a bit of a popularity competition. And so the people who get the most, who are the most popular, are going to go in and lead us in state government. This wasn't that. It wasn't just because the people liked it. God confirmed the wisdom of the apostles through agreement among the broader group. The apostles were led by the Lord, not popular opinion. Yet because they were all in basic agreement, they agreed on how the Lord was leading them. It was a really collaborative effort here. Considering that all that could have gone wrong when Satan tried to attack through the division, everyone involved deserves a bit of a clap. Those with the complaint, the Hellenists, did the right thing. They actually made the need known in the proper circle. Instead of complaining and whining and triangling and just having a good old session around a cup of tea, they made the complaint known and they trusted the process. Those of the other party, the Hebrews, did the right thing too. They deserve a clap. They recognised that the Hellenists had a legitimate concern, a legitimate need, and they trusted the solution to the apostles. The apostles did the right thing. They responded to the need without distracting themselves from the task that had been set to them, their central task. Because the situation was handled with wisdom and sensitivity to those who were offended, a potentially divisive issue was diverted, and the gospel continued to go forth, and it grew. My first pastor when I became a Christian was a gorgeous guy called Pastor Mike Robinson, who passed away about a year ago. I have nothing but admiration from this man, but one of the quotable quotes from Pastor Mike is that conflict is inevitable. So conflict is inevitable, but combat is optional. We do not have to have a red corner and a blue corner and put on our gloves and fight it out to the bell. Satan's strategy failed. He tried to divide the church and it did not work. But Satan's secondary target also failed. The apostles were not diverted from the focus of ministry that God had placed on them, to focus on the word of God and to prayer. Our passage today has some themes, apart from listening, as well as listening, I want to draw out and apply to a few current challenges for our church. No, we're not all fighting with each other, and I'd like to think we won't. But there are some takeaways and some transferables here. Three of the themes in this passage, I believe, are diversity, inclusion, and social justice. All words that I hear regularly within this church family, within this church community, and I believe that we hold dear. Our information pack to potential lead pastors says this. There's a lot of words, I'm going to read it out, but it's going to be there for a while for you to have a look at when you get sick of my voice and consider some of these words. Let's see, there we go. Let's trick again, and one more. Lots of words, and a church building. Do you recognise this? Nice. West Ryde Community Church seeks to welcome, include, value and respect all people, irrespective of age, disability or ability, race, gender, marital status and sexual orientation. All people, including those who do not yet follow Jesus, are welcome to participate in our ministries and activities. Leaders, pastors, and staff are followers of Jesus who've been recruited based on merit, in consideration of calling, giftedness, skills, and talents. This is in our pastoral search documentation. It was brought to the leaders by the pastoral search team. It was approved by the leadership team and brought to you as the body of believers at West Ryde Community Church and unanimously approved. So it's not something I made up. All of our potential pastors have received a pack that includes this. Yet, are all welcome, included, and respected here, or just some? How inclusive are we really? What about if you're gay? I said the word in church. What if you're gay? What if you're transgender? What if you're gender neutral? What if you don't know yet? What if you're exploring? I suspect that the response here would be many and varied. Some people will have already thought through and have a very solid stance. Some people will have inherited their stance, and some people will wish that we had never had to think about this issue, because love Jesus and the Bible will probably are all the answers that I need to know. At a church level, we've not had any meaningful or much meaningful discussion and discernment around these matters. Yet these types of issues are being raised and discussed within our broader church family, within our broader community, within our denomination, globally. Another theme from our passage I want to point out is, how was the problem resolved? And I'm proposing it was resolved together, collaboratively, and with some kind of consensus, led by the leaders, but following God. There was a lot of listening to the heart of the problem, listening to perspectives on the issue, listening to God to identify the real issues and resolve them his way. Exactly how the leaders of West Ryde intend to respond to the questions around inclusion, these current questions. In late December, the Baptist Association of New South Wales and the ACT responded to concerns, some of which you heard here. They listened to the concerns that were wrapped around the November meeting and changed its mind about a February meeting, which was set to vote on remaining matters. Remember those 22, 23 long-winded legal-looking terms that we brought to you guys? So they've stopped. We will not be having a February meeting around that. So that one's stopped, and so we don't need to send delegates to that to vote. And you would have seen us as, you know, we came back after that meeting, those of us who attended, it wasn't pretty. So those motions that are passed back then in November, they will remain as passed. And those that didn't remain in limbo, in no man's land. Although the upcoming May Annual General Assembly will not vote as planned on amendments to the Assembly Constitution, the Association Constitution, those issues that were raised have not actually been resolved or really even been discussed at a denomination level in New South Wales. Not in an open, transparent, loving way. Nor have they miraculously disappeared. Last year, the leaders met before the Special Assembly in November, and I have rarely been in a space where I have seen difference worked through in a more mature way. It was inspiring. At that meeting, the leaders that you have elected gathered together to talk about how the church, how representatives of the church would vote at the upcoming meeting. And in that room, we had people from each end of the spectrum. And I suspect within this church today, we will have people who have very passionate points of view in direct, apparently, opposition to each other. The result of that meeting was the leaders arrived at consensus based on West Ryde's values. That's where we had to go, using what we had as the values of West Ryde Community Church in order to instruct delegates. But the leaders also decided to proactively engage in this potentially tricky discussion with the broader church community. And I'd like to think that we will have the same degree of maturity and love as was shown in that leaders' meeting. The leaders are looking to see how the church thinks and feels, to listen to God through the gathered assembly in preparation. So what are the end goals? There's got to be a point to this. We're not talking just for the sake of talking. As I said, the Annual General Assembly of Baptists in May will happen. And we hope to facilitate some kind of exploration and conversation with lots of listening in the months before, in order to help delegates and all of us have a greater understanding of how this church community is discerning its response to these issues together. Following that, as a church family, we may want to continue to explore more of what the Bible scholars, more of what the Bible, more of what the Spirit has to say on these subjects. Or we may feel that we're ready to wrestle with our discernment, with God, with each other, in kind of set it in some kind of documentation, some kind of more formal, maybe position statement, the way that Seaforth Church has, and other churches. Or some other way of communicating where we have arrived at so far. Or we may think that we've done enough and we don't need to do anything else. This is a very fluid process. This is not a maths equation where we're looking to tell you what to think. This is not the first contentious issue to attempt to divide the Christian church. And let me tell you a secret. It won't be the last. Westride has graciously holds the tension of many different points of view on a vast number of issues already, just as the broader Baptist Association has done historically. How we address these kinds of things matter. The early believers in today's scripture reading did not sweep the problem of the widows under the rug. Can I just flag, I do not think that we are saying that being gay is a problem necessarily. We're talking about an issue and how we feel about it. So I don't want us to say the widows were a problem any more than we say gay people are a problem, or transgender, or whatever extension you want to take that on. They didn't sweep this issue under the rug. They engaged the wisdom of the whole group of believers, the multitude of disciples, and discerned the solution with a lot of listening, a lot of praying, and a lot of wisdom. This is how we hope to move forward on this at Westride: listening together, learning together, holding our differences because of the love we have for one another and our love of God, discerning between what really matters. What are salvation issues? What is at the core of our faith? The early believers in our Acts reading showed sensitivity to others, and we'll need to continue to do the same here. Some of what we share or hear may be very personal. Our interpretation of verses in the Bible may differ to someone else's that we love or someone we don't like, and it gives us a great excuse to split. There may be painful triggers. Our website says this. Let me try again. Our website says this. We affirm that all people have the right to be emotionally and physically safe, respected, and have their views and opinions valued at all time. Can we do that? Can we love like that? Please remember that pastoral care will be available for support. So please point anyone in the direction of Pastor Karen or myself, of leaders, of wise people such as Dorothy. I just popped you out there. Sorry about that. I didn't warn you in advance. But we'll need to commit to caring for each other. Really listening, really caring. There'll be a lot of information and different points of view, and too much information between now and May to just look at Sunday services. When Pastor Karen and I looked at our calendar, we have about 6 opportunities, including this one, on Sunday mornings. We have a 99th anniversary coming up, and I keep hearing 99 red balloons, Karen. we have an anniversary coming up. We also have a quarterly meeting coming up. We have Palm Sunday. We've got Easter Sunday. We do not want to be directed all our attention on something, some issue anywhere, and take our eyes off some of these bigger opportunities that we have there. Not everything you read attached to e-news or in a small group discussion or even from here will actually represent everybody's point of view or the extent of. Every time I'm talking to a new potential speaker here, they tell me that they would take months and months and months to talk on one aspect of this bigger issue. There's going to need to be individual responsibility. So we're going to need to listen. We're going to need to consider different points of view. We're going to recognize that we might not be right, or that somebody else here is on a different part of the journey and may wind up at a different place. It's going to be everybody's responsibility, your personal responsibility, as people who are no longer on meat, on milk, that have grown up, who are growing up in faith. It will be everybody's individual responsibility to learn, but also to share to the degree that they feel is right for them. Some people will want to dig really, really deep, and theology will be really important to them. At Seaforth Church, when they did this journey, they have a lot of theologians. They have Mike Frost there. They have four ex-pastors, I believe, and this is a deeply academic, intellectual, theological congregation. I'm not sure where Seaforth. We don't have to transfer the way that they did this. We need to do it a uniquely West Ryde Community Church way, whatever that looks like. And we are not experts. Karen, are you and I experts in this? Leaders, are you guys experts in this? Do you know any experts in this? I phoned the association and asked if we could borrow an expert. You're an expert? Yes, absolutely. We have access. But that process of discernment is a little messier than a direct telephone line. I called the association, asked for their resident expert, and they really don't have one. They pointed us in the directions where we can get some support, but they don't have an expert either, and they have not, as an association, had a transparent conversation around these issues. It's largely been shut down. Remember the Hebrews and the Hellenists? They were all believers. They were all Jesus followers. I want to do something that might sound radical. Do we gossip? Can I encourage us to gossip? Not malicious gossip? Yeah, so that's right, David. We want to gossip. There's a book called Sapiens. And the core of this is the idea that our gossip is what brought us from apes through to where we are today. I'm not sure, I'm not advocating, but I want to ask you to gossip. I want you to talk together, but I don't want it to be malicious gossip and hearsay. I want you to be able to share your points of view with others and to truly, truly listen. In our Acts passage today, Satan's strategy failed. He tried to divide the church and it didn't work. And he tried, his secondary strategy was to distract the church, to distract from ministry. We too must be really careful not to let any one issue, no matter how important it might be to us, or how important we might think it is, to distract us from our mission. Does any one issue define us as a believer? Does any one issue define us as a church? Does any one policy define us? be it gender, inclusion, worship, divorce, social justice, or any other issue that might divide believers. Or ultimately, does only one person, one thing, one God define us? Let's not be distracted. Let's not be fearful. Westride has engaged in difficult subjects before. Westride already is a place of inclusion and diversity. But how much? We are a loving, nimble community ready to push deeper into God's heart, to listen to his voice and to follow his lead together. I can invite the worship team to come up and lead us as we reflect.